Cement is a valuable resource for the world's infrastructure, yet it leaves a large carbon footprint. Rich Rogers from the Cement Council of Texas joins the podcast to talk about the importance of cement for the transportation industry and how cement use is evolving to meet global environmental conditions. Transportation infrastructure. It's what keeps our economy moving and gets people safely where they need to go. But maintaining safe, reliable infrastructure assets is a complex challenge that requires innovative solutions. I'm Nick Frank from Agile Assets, and I'll be your guide as we navigate through the complex and evolving world of infrastructure asset management. Every episode, you'll discover best practices, industry trends, and agency success stories that will help you improve your asset management strategies and get the most from your infrastructure funding. You'll learn how to save time, save money, and save lives while delivering safer, longer-lasting transportation networks. My guest today is Rich Rogers. Rich is the executive director of the Cement Council of Texas, where he leads a team that promotes the effective use of cement and concrete while also optimizing concrete designs to lower the carbon footprint. He has over 45 years of experience in pavement design, construction, and maintenance, and has served on numerous boards and committees with the American Concrete Institute, the American Society for Testing and Materials, and the Transportation Research Board. Rich, welcome to the podcast.
Good afternoon, Nick. I'm happy to be here.
So, Rich, tell me about your role at the Cement Council.
Well, our role is really quite simple. We're here to promote the use of cement and concrete in the state of Texas, to educate the owners on the benefits and the engineering practitioners on how to best use cement and concrete. We focus on trying to reduce the cost and yet improve performance. And we can show that is very possible.
Tell me why cement is so important to not only the transportation industry, but our infrastructure as a whole.
Well, in Texas, you know, while we are the number one producer in the USA, everything in our infrastructure depends almost on cement. It is the number one produced product in the world. The changes in the world weather, the environmental conditions, are causing us to want to build and make everything more sustainable. And two good examples of that are one in Houston, where after a hurricane 1 year, then 2 years later, a tropical storm that put down 50 inches of rain, flooding all the roads, they had to get materials in and out. So heavy trucks came in and out while they were flooded. They did a bunch of testing on all the roads and found that because the Texas Department of Transportation in the Houston area, their general process is to deep stabilize. And that prevented any erosion or structural issues for the majority of their roads. And then Mexico Beach in Florida, where the only home left in a town where the hurricane went through was one concrete home. It just demonstrates the need for changing codes and insurance requirements based on the resilience of what you're building.
What are some things an agency can do now to improve their processes for using cement?
Well, I think they need to change the standard operating procedures that they have now. Currently, it's standard practice to take virgin materials out there. We would like to promote the use of local materials that maybe otherwise couldn't be used as a base or a foundation material, but when stabilized, can be demonstrated to be very durable and can carry heavy loads, and allow the pavement structure to be reduced in thickness. I think that's a big thing that we need to start looking at.
You mentioned earlier how Texas is the top producer of cement in the United States, yet it still needs to import a bunch of cement to meet the state's demands. Why import all this cement and not just increase the capacity?
Adding capacity is a 6 years process. It takes 3 years to get a permit and then another three to get construction done. And the big issue is they can import it cheaper than they can produce it. So there's not a lot of incentive to gamble on the economy in the future when you can be more competitive now.
So why does it take so long? You mentioned this 6 year process. Why does it take so long to receive that permit and construct a plant?
Well, that's a good question. Basically, they have to do an environmental assessment and they have to look at what the new codes are going to be. And they have to take into account public concerns. But why 3 whole years? That's a really good question. And plus, it adds to the dilemma of the cement producer, because they don't really know what the code changes are going to be and how much more it's going to cost them to meet the environmental requirements. At the same time, we can import cement from countries that don't have the same environmental requirements, and solving the existing environmental requirements, and they get harder and harder to meet all the time, is very expensive. We know it's needed, but it's still very expensive.
You mentioned the environment. How do environmental requirements play into all of this?
Well, it's just like all the pressure on coal plants, that you have to have such clean air coming out of it. You have to spend a lot of money to filter that air and recycle it. I do know of plants in Milwaukee where they do have clean coal plants. And in Texas, our members have gone to a lot of effort to provide the Texans with very clean air.
What is your organization, the Cement Council, doing to lower the carbon footprint of this cement-making process?
Already, we've talked TxDOT into, for all their classes of concrete, that they use a low-carbon cement, where you take limestone fines, which really are a waste product, and grind it with the cement, and found to get this very good performance out of it as long as you don't go over about 20%. So it really reduces the carbon footprint. The other thing we do is optimize pavement design. Currently, most engineers focus on the pavement layer itself and not what's under it. And by stabilizing maybe the existing pavement that you're replacing or adding structure to, stabilizing it or stabilizing local materials, you can reduce that pavement thickness and still get better performance than if you hadn't, at a lower cost because you don't do the hauling. So we're constantly looking for ways like that to reduce the carbon footprint.
You talked about some other substances that can be used. What are some alternative substances that can help in that process of lowering the carbon footprint?
Well, TxDOT, the Texas Department of Transportation, has investigated and is now allowing all of their cements to be a limestone cement, which significantly reduces the carbon footprint because you're using limestone fines that are otherwise a waste product and intergrinding it with the cement clinker. And it's been demonstrated through research that that doesn't in any way affect the performance. The other thing is moving toward an optimized pavement design. Currently, most designers are focused on the concrete layer. And by optimizing it, by increasing a stabilized layer below and reducing the upper layer, where you have to have your hard sands for skid resistance, where you have to have a dense mix so that it resists the salts, the de-icing salts, the lower layers don't require that. In fact, there's even been some investigation into two-layer paving for just those reasons.
And as we continue to talk about environmental concerns, how do you and your organization, how do you plan for the ever-changing environmental conditions?
I mean, you can look around the world and see what's happening and the flooding that's occurring and the storms that we're getting. And it just so happens that cement likes water. It doesn't lose strength with water. I can remember in 1983 in Texas, we had 2 weeks of 20 degrees or lower weather. We lost, I would say, 90% of the secondary roads in Texas that had just a crushed stone base. Had they been stabilized, they wouldn't have had a problem. But they were subject to freeze-thaw durability, which is something Texas normally doesn't worry about. Are we going to go back and have another one of these? Can we really afford to replace 90% of the secondary system on a regular basis? That's something we really have to ask. Is it worth the risk not to spend a little now to save a lot later?
That's a great point. And that seems to be a big focus of, yes, do you invest a little bit more now instead of down the line? And as we talk about down the line, what makes you optimistic about the future of cement transportation and that this industry as a whole?
You know, when you look at lowering the carbon footprint and the fact that concrete has lower maintenance than most of the other alternatives, and by doing the stabilization, you're reducing the hauling. You're using local materials. And, you know, you can see the public now, they don't like these gravel plants all around. So we need to try and reuse everything we can. And I think that needs to be a goal.
Is there anything else that you want to add?
I would like to add, and that is, I think that we need new testing standards. When you look at the specifications that are being used by the Departments of Transportation around the United States, generally it's based on, for acceptance, on density or strength. And yet, two materials with the same strength will not have the same durability, nor will they have the same fatigue characteristics. And that is what's going to give us long-term performance and a resilient pavement. So we need to develop test standards that tell you what is the best stabilizer. Maybe it's not always cement for the given conditions as far as durability and the loading. We need a standard test so that we can objectively determine what's the best stabilizer and how much is needed and what the impact of adding too little or too much is. Too many times people think more is better. With cement, many times, more is not better.
Rich, I think I'll have to bring you on again for a whole episode on testing and designs and things like that. But for today, thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
If you want to learn more about cement, best practices, or any other topic we discussed today, head on over to agileassets.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening and leave us a review. Once again, thanks to Rich Rogers for sharing his expertise with us today. I'm Nick Frank. Join us again next month for another episode of Move Your Assets.